Well, welcome back, Alana J.
Happy to be here, Daniel B.
Hello, everybody. It's April. And yes, it's my birthday this month.
Yes, everybody, I know you're wondering, how old is he turning?
Let me just say I'm getting a lot of mail from AARP.
It's a big one.
It's April, and we're back with another episode of Dan Has a Plan Beyond the Balance Sheet. I'm Daniel B. Smith, a financial advisor on the Family Wealth Management team at UBS Financial Services. Our branch is located in Paramus, New Jersey, and I can be reached at the easy email, daniel.b.smith@ubs.com. I'm joined by my daughter, Alana J. Smith.
I'm still here.
Excellent. And today's topic is failure.
Oh, failure. So this episode is a little different. We don't have an expert today. It's just you and me.
It's just myself and my daughter.
It's a father-daughter dance today.
It is. And this is by design.
By design. Yeah. You know a lot about failure, Dan?
I do.
You do?
I have a lot of experience with it.
You seem pretty successful to me.
It's a topic I've really wanted to do a podcast on for a long time.
And I know you wanted to talk about this because there's a lot of volatility in the market right now in particular.
So when I talk about volatility and I sent an email to the client base, I said, listen, the month of March was very volatile. Year to date, when you blended everything in, people were a little bit up or flat or maybe a little bit down. But I basically was requesting that they re-engage and be fully engaged in their financial plan. Mm-hmm. Because in times when things are negative and people tend to really focus on the negative more or the failure more, than the positive.
What happens? They want to sell all their...
Well, they want to, it's a flight to safety. They want to go to cash or CDs or treasury bills or something of that nature. And in dealing with them and knowing them, which is really a big part, there's not only the financial planning process, I can show them mathematically and overlaying volatility. But at the end of the day, there's emotion and I have to respect the emotion. What I've done here is I'm going to use the word fail in different tenses. So failed. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you failed?
I failed that class.
There you go. It's usually test related, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I say that, but I don't think I ever failed a class. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself not to do that. But yeah, failed some kind of like test or school situation, pass fail.
So you're going on record today of saying that you've never failed a test.
No, it's not that I've never failed a test. Definitely failed a test.
Okay.
But not failed a class, an entire class. I don't think I've ever had an F.
All right.
We'll have Sue Smith fact check that.
She's the one.
Yeah.
Then there's the word failure.
That feels more personal. Like I am a failure.
Right. So when people say they're a failure, they're really talking about themselves. And it tends to be emotional.
Yeah. Do you feel like when people say they're a failure, whether they're a client or I've said that before, like I've felt that way, do you think it's realistic or because of the emotions, people are often blowing it out of proportion?
In most cases, I feel it's an over-exaggeration. It's emotional. If someone just says to me, I'm such a failure, I would say something like this. Well, let's ratchet back a couple steps here.
Mm-hmm.
Build me up to why you think that. So I'm big about what are the positives of the person. And usually as they reflect on that, they're not a failure.
Right. If you can flip it around on its head and say, I'm good at all these other things. I have all these positives in my life. I can feel grateful for my home, my family, my friends. That's not a failure. By definition, that person we just described is not a failure.
Yeah, it's usually an emotional moment.
Yeah.
Then there's the word failing.
I'm failing.
I'm failing.
Failing at this.
When someone says to you, I'm failing, what does that mean?
You know, it actually feels less emotional and less final than saying I'm a failure. That feels definitive. I'm failing. If I'm feeling that way, feels like there's something to be changed. There's a way out.
When I hear you say that, it tells me you need some help.
Mm-hmm.
I need some help because I'm failing.
I'm failing, but I haven't given up.
Correct. I was just thinking that. So failing is also optimism.
Yeah, I agree.
Just because I'm failing doesn't mean I'm going to fail.
Or I'm a failure.
So you played sports, I played sports.
Mm-hmm.
You played softball, I played baseball. So I always say when I coached, softball or baseball is a game of failure.
Huh. Okay, go on.
You're not going to get a hit every time up. You're not going to score a run every time you get up to the plate. You're not going to catch every ball. You're not going to throw it to the right base every time. You're going to maybe throw it out of bounds and it's penalized. These are all failures. Both teams are failing as they play. It's the team that fails less.
It's funny to look at it that way.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, so. I like that.
What about in family?
Well, back to sports for a second.
Okay. My favorite topic. So
yeah, let's just go right back. I was just thinking about how sometimes I would play second base, right? And I remember playing second base was about covering a gap. So whether or not the hitter was lefty or righty would influence where you played in that gap, whether or not that hitter had a history of hitting far or if you thought they were going to bunt. You know, like it was about kind of balancing the space between first base and shortstop, right?
Correct.
Now, a lot of it was guesswork. I would often dive for the ball. Most of the time, I wasn't going to get that ball. Most of the time I failed. There was a lot of leaping without a net.
So let me take my perspective of second base to you.
Okay.
The nuances of second base, defensively speaking. So you have to teach the player how to feel the ball. If it's hit hard, soft to your right, if it's hit to your left. So those are the four quadrants of a ground ball. Then there's the fly ball. It could be short, it could be to your right, to your left, back. Those are eight things you have to learn right there. Then, as you said, is it a lefty hitter or is it a righty hitter? And then you have to know what type of pitcher is on your team. Is it a pitcher who throws the ball hard? Mm-hmm. Is it a pitcher that lobs it more? Do you know what type of pitch the pitcher is throwing to the catcher? You should know that at second base. Is it a fastball? Is it a curveball? You have to know how many outs there are. You have to know how many runners are on base. Mm-hmm. You have to know what to do with the ball if it's hit to you and what you do the ball if it's hit to you and it's not successful. So you could actually be in a game where you're winning by two runs with the bases loaded and two outs, where you can dive for a ball and not catch it, but just flip it to the second baseman and get the third out so you succeed it. So you can fail and succeed in the same breath.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So you can go very deep with failure, how failure actually can be a positive.
Yeah.
Now that's just one position. We're not even talking about weather. Is it wet? Is it sunny?
Yeah.
Do I need sunglasses? Is it windy? Do you back up first base? Do you back up second base? Do you know how to turn a double play? Can you underhand the ball? Can you flip it to the right, to the left? You know,
this is why I didn't go pro.
You had skills.
I did. Yeah.
You had skills.
Yeah.
So, but it's just, that's a sporting analogy. Just because you failed at something doesn't mean you failed. Follow me?
Yeah. It's moment to moment.
Yeah. Were you paying attention when the pitch was thrown? Were you daydreaming? Were you fully engaged?
See, here's the thing about failure, because I face failure on a daily basis in the career that I picked. What sometimes gets hard is that I'm constantly looking for what could I have done better? What could I do better next time? How can I prevent this from happening again? And sometimes taking all that accountability on me gets heavy. Sometimes all the rules could go right and something still goes wrong.
Yes.
Right? So I think there's an overcorrection.
You know, when I played baseball, failure to me motivated me for the next pitch.
Yeah,
the next swing. And then what I would do in between games is practice what I was weak at. You know, it could be something very small. It could be something transformational. So with your career as a parent, I take what I call equator approach. I try to be the equator. I know that what you're going through on a daily basis can be hurtful. It could be painful. It can be embarrassing. It can be failing. But what I've always tried to tell you is if you're giving it your best effort and best preparation, that's all you can do for that moment. Whatever that moment is, goes into your tool bag as experience, and we get to the next moment. So then when you land roles, believe me, I'm very euphoric internally because I know the work you went through to get a role or a job or whatever it may be. But I temper that with not being overconfident for you. That keeps my emotions in a barometric state that I can handle for you.
Right. I mean, this isn't necessarily true for your clients, but in terms of you and me, I'm sure it's hard to watch your kid put themselves on the line and then it not go their way. Like, you brought this person into the world. Of course, you're going to feel something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a lot of clients and they have a lot of kids. They feel these emotions, whatever their area of pursuit is. It's tough.
So
man.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's okay.
Worth it?
Of course it's worth it.
Worth it.
Of course it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point of finding your own equilibrium, whether it is about your kid or about yourself and your own pursuits, like what keeps you grounded, because it can be an emotional ride.
That's true. So I wrote down a few things that I get involved with when I have what I call full attention discussions with clients.
Oh, okay.
This is when we're in a state of a meeting where they're not looking at their cell phone, not distracted by what's going on in the office next to me. I'm fully engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fully engaged. And these topics range from family, relationships, job, their spouse, their health, and financially.
Wow. I mean, I'm not hearing anything about stocks.
Correct. When we get down to full attention discussions, I'll start with family because we're family wealth management. The first thing I always ask people is, tell me about your family or how is your family? What I'll hear a lot is all the good things. Janie got a job. Tommy got into Northwestern. Susie is getting married. He's the greatest guy. But I hear far less about struggles.
Mm-hmm.
For example, their daughter is in a relationship that's not going well. Someone's in college, but has to take a semester off. I eventually hear about those things, but people don't like talking about failing or failure.
Yeah.
And I think it should be talked about.
Yeah, you're saying you're open to it as a financial planner. There are ways to make it easier.
I've used this saying, if it's important to them, it's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, celebrate the positives. I do. I'm all for that. But I think to have a full attention discussion, it has to be one that's honest. What I tell people is, you know, if something is happening with one of my kids that they're perhaps struggling a little bit or they're trying to find their way, I don't mind talking about it.
And good to know.
Yeah. No, you should, you know, this is how you have meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it is connective tissue. You've said to me before, you're not going to succeed every day.
No.
Which sometimes is hard for me to understand.
Well, I shouldn't say you're not going to succeed every day. There's always something you can succeed at, but it's your perception of, are you succeeding? Did you succeed for that day?
Yeah, that's a good thing to talk about. Like, what is your definition of success? Mine changes all the time.
I'll give just a cursory definition of success, okay? We're having a 12 o'clock appointment. I'm showing up at 10 to 12.
Of course.
I'm coming prepared for the meeting. And when I sit down, I'm engaged. To me, that is success. Secondarily, there's usually an agenda for the meeting. So I have some bullet points that I want to touch on. But I also want to give proper due to who I'm meeting with for what's on their mind and what's important to them. Then I do something Socratically, mm-hmm. meaning that, okay, I talked about this, 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 and this. You talked about this, 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 and this. This is where I think we have some common ground to move forward. I call that success. Tell me what it is and what you do, how you define it.
It's funny. I had the chance this morning to talk to some apprentices where I did my acting apprenticeship. And we got on the subject of what were some highs and what were some lows kind of thing in my career. And I said that a lot of times it feels like a job and that's okay. Very early on, a mentor said to me, the magic experience, the roles you take on and the productions you're a part of, whether it's on screen or on stage, where everything feels really artistically fulfilling, they're really few and far between. So most of the time it's a job. And I think that ties into success because there's this expectation that everything has to be, you know, like I chose to pursue what I love and people expect it. Like, you know, the saying, if you choose something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yep.
I just think that that's not necessarily true. There's a lot of work involved and there's a lot of things that are really difficult. Overall, my version of success is if I'm creative, if I'm staying creative. I am passionate about getting underrepresented stories out there, spinning a story on its head so that an audience gets its escape for the night. Giving back to people in that way, giving them a night out, a story that hasn't been heard yet getting its voice. And that could take its form in acting on a stage, in directing, in writing. So if I'm staying creative, which this is hard to remember a lot of the time because it's also a job, but if I'm staying creative, I feel successful. Even this podcast is creative for me.
That's beautifully said.
Thanks.
And that's great. And to flip it over to beyond the balance sheet, particularly client meetings, the magic happens at the client meeting, in person or by Zoom. Sometimes by phone, but every year I try to bring a little something creative to the experience,
mm-hmm.
something different, not like throwing a blanket on the client base and everybody's going to get the same question. It's more unique to that specific client. You know, we can talk about the basics of investing. There's a lot to talk about. Financial planning, there's a lot to talk about and a lot to show. But I also feel they're working with our team for a personal experience. So it has to be motivating for them as well. So knowing that I'm introducing things that can take some of the emotion out of the equation, that makes them feel better. And I feel I'm doing right by them for the emotional quotient. I think at the end of the day, they're worried of failing. I think they intuitively know that if they own a stock, it's not going from $300 a share to zero overnight, but it's the ride. It's the roller coaster.
And you're looking at these numbers and the red and the down. It's like you're watching the news and all. It's like it's a lot of stimulation saying, alert, alert.
Yes. Wherever you get your news, by streaming, by cable, by
podcasts.
Correct. Where you get your news, please lift the cover up knowing that news stations rely on advertising dollars, and advertising dollars are generated by the audience that's viewing the show. So their job is to formulate opinions. We've heard about fake news. There's Republican stations, there's Democrat stations, there are independent stations, there's foreign stations, there's conspiracy theorist stations. There's whatever you're feeling like, you can find a station that's going to feed into that emotion.
Okay? Of course. It's like Googling your symptoms.
Yes. You can Google investments. You can Google other financial planners. You can Google other broker dealers. But at the end of the day, I feel what is most important is the personal financial plan of that client and the connection I can bring to that client by knowing who they are, what they're trying to accomplish, and trying to fully engage in the emotional experience they're going through at the time, whether it's market related, family related, relationship related, failure related. And that's really where I feel my group kind of sets ourselves apart a little bit.
So your recommendation in this time of volatility or uncertainty is to book a meeting. Yes. Come talk about it.
Got to talk about it. The worst thing you can do with any problem is not to talk about it. So there has to be someone you can confide in. I just offer that as part of what I do. The value is trying, not failing to hear them. I think that's important. A lot of people work with me that are married, and I always push for both spouses to be at a meeting.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's important. There has to be a baseline for both of them. There may be the alpha person who's going to take control of it, but you don't want to say, well, I let them do it because they're better at it. I'm terrible. I said, well, we're not going to accept terrible.
We don't talk like that here.
No. No, we're gonna build from a point of positivity. You're not gonna fail at this. When I think of that word FAIL, it's prevalent with all my meetings. Mm-hmm. Really, something will come up.
People feel like they're failing at something.
Yeah.
Well, I bet people come in and they're like, I should be making more money by this point, or this should be doing more by this point, or there's all this like societal pressure.
Yeah. What I try to do with comments like that is I show them their financial plan. I'll use your name, Alana J. Smith.
That's me.
There's only one of you. It's your plan. You define what success is. We're not comparing your plan to Alana J. Jackson.
Who is she?
Exactly.
I don't even know her.
Right. So why compare? There's way too much pressure, whether it's coming from family, from friends, from the media, social media, I guess is right word, right?
Yeah.
So as you know, I'm less than involved. Okay.
You're not a social media man.
I'm not. I don't know anything from Instagram or Facebook, TikTok.
It would be so funny to even imagine you on there at this point.
Yeah. So
gone so far.
LinkedIn is mine.
But yeah, you can be sitting there scrolling and taking in all this information without even realizing it. And you could close the app and walk away feeling like, I'm such a failure. I don't have this. I don't look like that. I don't have this.
I met a couple of days ago with a couple in their late 70s. And for years, they've been telling me they wanted to go to Italy.
Whoa, they got to go.
Exactly. So I did their financial plan. I put in Italy. Financial plan worked beautifully. But this went on for a few years.
They didn't go?
They didn't go. So finally, last year, they went.
Okay, amazing.
And when they came to my office this week, they came in like different people.
Really?
They said, they kept saying to each other on the vacation, Dan said we could do this, so let's enjoy it.
Wow. Right.
Right. And I felt so good about that.
Yeah.
I really did. And then I ran their plan. Their plan is still on track.
It's totally fine.
Perfect.
Yeah.
They both said at the end of the meeting, this gives us such empowerment when we meet with you that we can do things and we don't have the fear of running out of money. And that's really the big thing, failing.
Yeah.
Running out of money is failure. And that's the number one thing that I deal with when I do financial planning.
The fear of failure.
I can't retire. I'll never have enough money. I can't go here. I'll never have enough money. I can't send my kid to this school. There'll be no money. Instead of me telling you, instead of you worrying about it, why not let the plan do it? The plan does great work in combating failure.
Wow. Yeah. Do you feel like there's always going to be more you can reach for? When you were kind of coming up in your life, did you feel like there was a number you hit where you felt like, oh, I can relax for a second? Or is it just never that? Or is it the plan?
Financially?
Yeah, I guess this fear of failing or running out of money, you worked your way up to feel a certain level of comfort in your life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you remember when the fear of failing or running out of money went away?
Yes.
You do?
I was 42.
Whoa. Okay.
I met Paul Platyk. We met in 2002. And he said, I'm a certified financial planner. I just started at this broker dealer and I was not a certified financial planner. So I said, well, what does that mean exactly? And he said, well, let's do your financial plan.
Whoa.
And here I was, you know, married, 3 kids, 42, career change. You know, my success was always defined as, could I house my kids and my family? Could I put food on the table? Could I meet all the bills? That was kind of what I strove for. Okay. And I gave everything I could to my job to do that. Usually multiple jobs.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
But Paul put a different spin on it for me via the financial plan. Said, it takes the emotion out of it. He goes, Dan, I don't care where we start. This is just where we're starting. So now 23 years later, you know, I do my plan once a year now. I adhere to the principles that Paul, I hear him in my head all the time. I self-plan for myself. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a nice feature, but there is no fear of failure anymore.
Because of the plan.
Yeah, I don't feel that. And that's the main thing. I always tell people that when they come to me that they've done the heavy lifting. They could have some money in their 401k plan. They could have good jobs. They can have whatever. Okay. It doesn't matter when they come to me. I'm trying to take some of that burden off their shoulders. That's all. So they can feel good about where they're going. A lot of people think they fail because they're not making enough money. It's not what you make. It's what you put away. And I know that sounds easy, but
no, it doesn't. Oh.
But it's just about discipline. Pay yourself first, because when you looked in the mirror this morning, who was the most important person to you in your life?
You, yeah.
There you go. So we've kind of dug pretty deep here into failure today.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to bring it up?
I think you've covered it. I think that's a real good case for trusting the plan and when times get uncertain to have someone to go to.
Yeah. And it's just not for money. Okay. It's having a fully engaged conversation with your planner about the emotions around things that are around your plans, because that's what's driving the behavior. I've got to know what's on your mind, and you have to share in order to succeed. Use it as a point of motivation if you're feeling that, mm-hmm. and have a meeting with a financial planner. If he or she is worth her salt, they'll engage with you and they'll hear you.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to say there's no hope here.
Correct.
There's always something to do.
There's always something to do.
Okay. Well, it sounds like Dan really has a plan on this one.
Well, let's not fail together.
Okay. Sounds good.
Is that a way to end it?
Let's not fail together. Yeah. It's a nice slogan. We'll fail upwards.
How about fail upwards?
Fail upwards.
All right.
We'll make t-shirts. All right. Love you.
Love you.
Presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.